This is our first meeting of the House State Affairs for 2016, second session of our legislature. We have two bills to be heard this morning. As it happens, both bills are mine, so I'm going to give the duty to my trusty vice chair over here. And he will remain vice chair if he doesn't pick me up on anything. As you all know, this is going to be a very, very busy session on the floor and all the various committees that we're going to be hearing all kinds of bills. And I sometimes get a note or call from a constituent, well, why are you doing this bill and that bill? Because we have all the problems with the budget and all the problems with potential revenue sources, you know, and so on. And I don't know that the general public sometimes understands that we do know how to multitask in this place. But the main point I want to make here, yes, we are trying to schedule bills after somebody puts in a hearing request. We're trying to schedule, you know, what we can and what we should. But no bill that we hear in this committee on any subject is going to have a higher priority than anything on the budget or on the revenue. So that will always come first on any bills that we hear, anything to do with the budget or with potential revenue and that type of thing. But we do have important bills in this committee on a whole variety of subjects. So with that, I got a note here. Oh, yeah, we got to call the roll, and it's R-O-L-L.
Yeah,
got the roll. Got R-O-R-O-L.
Vice chair.
Yeah, that's right. The chair knows how to spell roll. Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Vasquez? Not president?
She's also not the president. Maybe it would be better than some of the candidates. Go ahead.
Representative Grunberg, not present. Representative Price Tompkins.
Here.
Representative Tallarico.
Here.
Representative Stewart.
Here.
Chair Lynn.
I am here. Okay, with that, we're going to hear two bills this morning. One, first bill is on extension of the parole board. We have folks in order to testify on that. And the second one is Military Family Day. Since both of these bills happen to be mine, it's usually my custom to let my vice chair handle my own legislation. And I'd like to welcome Reverend Vasquez. She just came in. Make a note of that, please. So with that, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being a chair, you've got all these details to remember, you know, as you go. One of them is that Representative Vasquez just showed up. Thank you. I'm glad you're here. And I also want to introduce our support staff over here. Bob meant to, but I'll go ahead and do it as long as we go. Yeah. House records, we got Lori Rowland, and moderator is Christy Perrin and Ben Manley. So that's the staff we're going to have here.
Mr. Chairman, I also point out that we have new equipment now. And when you sign up to testify, as I understand it, you sign up outside and it goes to the moderator over here and it gets on his little iPad. It all kind of stuff on the iPad here about who gets called and why. And I'm going to let him test it out this morning. So we don't know who we're going to call, basically.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It also gives your life history, so. So, Representative Lynn, if you go ahead and tell us about the bill and what we should do with it.
Okay, the first bill we'll be hearing this morning is HB 231 for extending the Board of Parole. And basically, what the bill is about is just what I said. We have a lot of different bills here that have, you know, a sunset provision on it. I think that's a good thing. And as a matter of aside, if we get any tax bill or anything like that, I may put an amendment in to put sunset on any potential revenue new bills we might get. So that's it. I'm going to let, if I may, my staffer present the bill.
Okay. Give us your name and introduce yourself and go ahead, Esther.
Thank you. My name is Esther Milkey. I'm staff to Representative Lynn. The Board of Parole currently serves in Alaska as the authority over parole setting. It is currently set in statute to be terminated on June 30th, 2016. HB 231 extends the date to June 30th, 2020. 2022. The Division of Audit did an audit on the Board of Parole last year. The audit includes an examination of the board's performance in light of the 11 sunset criteria points provided within the Alaska statute. The Division of Audit found the board to be in good standing, but provided four recommendations to improve their operations, which address 1, the accuracy and consistency of information contained in parole files, 2, documentation of victim and offender notifications, 3, deficiencies in proposed regulation changes methods, and 4, the security of the Department of Corrections information system. In response to the audit, the Board of Parole provided responses to the identified recommendations. Likewise, the Department of Corrections generally agreed with the recommendations. HB 231 fulfills the constitutional requirement that the state establish a parole system and accordingly assists in keeping Alaskans safe. And we have available for questions myself, Representative Lynn, Sherry Diegel from the Department of Corrections, and Chris Curtis from Legislative Audit, and I think Jeff Edwards is on the from the Board of Parole himself is here to speak on that he's online.
Any questions for the sponsor? Sponsor staff. Seeing none, what we're going to do is ask Jeff to come up and see if we have you know.
He's online.
Offnet, you're right. He's first up in Offnet. I'm learning to use the iPad. First thing I do is make a mistake. Jeff, are you online?
On the job training.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm the executive director for the Alaska Board of Parole. I'm available for any questions you may have.
I realize that you're available for questions. I just wanted to make sure you had opportunity to say what you want to say. For what it's worth, the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission, and the work that we've done has increased the importance of your function there. If you have anything to add as far as the changes you may be going through real quickly or plan to or whatever, anticipate, that'd be helpful to give us a little bit of insights on the committee.
Thank you. Again, Jeff Edwards with the Alaska Board of Parole. Yeah, we've been working with the commission on a regular basis, and they've been keeping us appraised as to what they've had in mind or recommendations for us coming down here in the near future. Some of the things that will directly affect us, certainly we're a part-time board or quasi-part-time, I guess, more so full-time it seems at times. And our board members, appointed by the governor, essentially work a lot of times from our houses in various locations throughout the state, and we convene on a monthly basis to conduct our hearings. Futuristic legislation is going to affect us, is going to incorporate us, increasing that work schedule. We're going to be asked to dramatically increase the number of people who apply for parole, which we, of course, support. One of our main objectives throughout the years has been to increase the number of applicants who apply for early release from prison. We feel that our process is a very solid process, in the fact that we can conduct a good evaluation of candidates and opposed to warehousing inmates in a hard bed, of course, that we all know is very expensive, and we can conduct a thorough evaluation of those applicants and potentially offer early release. Well, what we found is that the process is fairly cumbersome. The applicants at times don't want to apply. They have other plans. And certainly new legislation couldn't be introduced to mandate that all eligible inmates apply for early parole, which of course will increase our docket significantly. And I'll pause there if there's any other questions. There's some other legislation in there too that's going to directly affect us. In the overall global scope of to reduce recidivism, to free up hard beds, to allow people to transition and re-enter into our communities as returning Alaska citizens, and also to ensure that there's a fair and impartial review process of any parole violators that commit parole violations on the street.
Thank you, Jeff. Just for the record, the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission has been meeting for a little over a year. And there will be, or has been, I guess, legislation introduced, it's going to be presented on that. And the bottom line driver is that, let's put it that way, is the leadership, both the House and the Senate, and the various legislators have asked the commission to figure out how we're going to afford to keep our prisoners in the future because of the way the projected increase in inmates. We were looking at another Goose Creek construction project, and it gave us the opportunity to do some reform considerations, and I was really impressed with the work that was done. And it puts a lot of focus on the parole board because, obviously, when people get out, they need those transition procedures and processes and programs there to help. So, Jeff, I wish you well, and thanks for your information. Any other questions for Jeff? Seeing none, we have on in the room, Chris, are you here? I see you wanted to testify, Chris.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Chris Kurz, Legislative Auditor. I'm just really here for questions and discuss anything in the audit report that people might have found interesting or want more information on.
Representative Esquiz.
Well, thank you for your work. It's really appreciated. Ms. Curtis, on page 16 of the audit, there is a rate of revocation decisions by the board, and it's broken up from 2004 to 2007, those rates are quite high, but they even get higher 2011 to 2014. And, for example, 2011, for the record, is 74% are revoke and reparole. In 2012, it was 66% revoke and reparole. 2013, revoke, reparole. And 2014, 77%. Revoke and reparole. I would say we have a problem here. And I'm not saying the board itself, but something's going on that's not not succeeding in paroling these folks. Is it your conclusion? There's a note below this table that, quote, the board stated that past decisions 2004 through 2007 were heavily influenced by the elimination of various treatment programs during difficult budget years. Is it your conclusion that it's the lack of treatment programs that is leading to such high revocations?
Representative Esquiz, through the chair, I think the point we're actually trying to make is the column to the right of that. Revoke and deny. So as opposed to revoking and reparoling an individual and letting them remain in the community, as opposed to having them return into the prisons, from 2011-2014 as compared to 2004-2007, they were reparoling them at a much higher rate than in previous years. And the reason why we were told that they were being reincarcerated at a higher rate in 2004-2007 was the lack of treatment programs in the community as a result of budgetary restrictions during that time. So the audit makes the point that from our review, they were, during the audit period, being reparoled at a higher rate, which I believe is what the communities wanted to see.
Okay, just for clarification, for the record, Representative Esquiz was referring to the Sunset Review of the Department of Corrections and Board of Parole that we have in front of us here as the committee members, and there are some either easily available. Any other questions for the auditor on the review?
Grunberg has joined us.
And Representative Grunberg has joined us for the record. Seeing no further questions, Chris, you got off easy. Thank you. we have another legislative auditor here, Jonathan, if we had other questions. But That kind of works us through the public testimony that was here in front of us. So I'm going to close public testimony. Remember the procedure here. And it comes before the committee for further questions for the sponsor or recommendation from the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is outside of the scope of this hearing, but I'd like to see this audit was completed in April of 2015 and contains several serious recommendations with regard to the work of the board. I'd like to know what has been done to address those audit recommendations.
I'm trying to think who the best response on that would, of course, be Jeff and the executive board. I would recommend, you know, for what it's worth, it's probably not worth holding the bill up for that. We got the Justice Commission, just my own opinion, and you're free to disagree, but the Justice Commission, everything has done a lot of work. Also in the time, this is more, the issue is whether or not we're extending the deadline, the audit has been available, are you recommending, Representative Vasquez, that we do not act on the bill today?
No, not at all. Mr. Chairman, I think the work of this board is very, very critical to the criminal justice systems and to the community, so that's not at all, but I am interested in, because it's a critical role, whether they are addressing the good audit recommendations, and obviously that needs to be addressed at some point in time. But I'm not interested in holding up the bill.
No, okay. Could I suggest for the chair, maybe later in the, as we move along here, that we have the border parole in, maybe in the context of the bills, and look a little more deeply into what they do and what they have done to respond to the audit? Or?
Yes, I think it's a very good idea. Now, we are not quite the same thing, but we are going to have an overview of coming up.
Okay.
To address some of the issues in the correction system. And we might be able to slip that in there someplace.
I think that's a great idea if we would. And if we would, maybe just for the record here, for the staff and everything, if we could get a copy of this audit review before us at that time, that'll help us. We're all kind of spinning here, getting started, and that'll give us a little time to think about it. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm a little disorganized today. I see that the bill only has a six-year extension. I note that a number of other boards that are fairly non-controversial have an eight-year extension, and I'm wondering if somebody could explain why it was only 6 years for the parole board.
Sponsor?
I don't have the answer to that. I suggest somebody getting ready to come on and give us the answer.
Okay, come up. Identify yourself for the record again.
Good morning, and this is Chris Curtis with Legislative Audit. We recommended a six-year extension, and that is in light of the dynamic nature of the corrections policy arena right now, and the role how the board will change dramatically in the upcoming years, and as far as whether that warrants legislative oversight and monitoring at a more quicker rate than the maximum 8 years, and in light of the four recommendations that we made.
I'm at a little bit of a loss. I'm not very prepared today. And I don't know if you've covered this. Could you explain why?
Why the six-year extension
you
as opposed to...
You've made a couple of conclusions that are very general, but not enough for me to evaluate them. Assume I know nothing, which will be correct. Tell me why.
Representative Grunberg to the chair. There's a lot of pending policies out there for dramatic changes to the role of the Board of Parole and their workload and their procedures. In addition, there was recently implemented a new risk assessment tool that because of the timing of our audit, we really couldn't see the impact of that tool on the operations of the board. When we were evaluating what point it was warranted to come back from the legislator's perspective and review the board again, 8 years, 4 years, 3 years, we settled on 6 years in light that we would be able to see the implications of the policy changes at that point, and it would be time to come back and review the current status of the recommendations.
May I please follow?
Representative Grunberg?
I want to focus on the second prong. You've given two reasons. One, the changing nature of the board. I'll let that pass. I want to focus on the second one, which I think you said was a changing or evolving or something audit tool. Is that the term you used?
Representative Greenberg, through the chair, there is a new risk assessment tool that the board is using to evaluate the risk of applicants when they're evaluating the suitability of parole.
Oh, it's something internal to the board, not something to your office.
Absolutely.
Could you, do you want me to ask what it is?
Representative Greenberg, you could, but I would like to wait, because we're gonna have a lot of discussion on this. I've been serving on the Justice Commission, and I know that a lot of these topics will come up, and you'll get another bite of the apple on these issues. And so if we could just today focus on the date.
That would be acceptable to me, but it would be helpful at least to this representative if somebody could provide me, and I don't know if other members of the committee are also interested, in what this audit tool is.
The risk assessment tool, and we have the Commissioner of Corrections here, and he could, you know, he could talk the rest of the time on it, I'm sure, but we'll get opportunity for that.
I gather it's whether the offender is a risk to, if, okay, well, at some point, maybe we can get that, today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that we have the overview of corrections and so on a week from today, this next Thursday. Everybody be prepared for that.
Hey, Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I move that we move House Bill 231, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objections. Your first bill moved, probably the first one of the session for any of us.
Yes, I'd like to point out that this is the first committee of this session to hold a hearing on a bill. So we're setting a record, and this is the first one to pass out. So this committee is off and running on hearing various bills and trying to move it forward, trying to get things out of the way before we get some of the heavy-duty stuff.
Okay, thank you. So with that, and if you heard a train whistle, it was your imagination. It was just a simple bill. We're going to move on to another bill here. We're going to move on to, let's see, it's 175, HB 175, and we have a couple here to testify on the bill, but we're going to give the sponsor an opportunity to introduce it here. And, so with that, Esther, you're back. If you would, tell us about HB 175.
Well, go ahead.
All right. For the record, my name is Esther Milgie, your staff to Representative Lynn. Representative Lynn will have a lot more of the details, but just the nitty-gritty parts. HB 175 establishes Military Family Day to honor and support families of our servicemen and women in Alaska every year on November 1st. Nationally, November is designated as National Military Family Month. The President of the United States typically makes an annual announcement to inform the public about this month. We thought it was fitting to have our Alaska Military Family Day to coincide with the beginning of the nationally designated month. And Representative Lynn.
Representative Lynn.
Here. Thank you very much. This would seem like, at first blush, you know, another one of those day bills, but to me, it's far more than that. It's really rather important, I think, to our national defense. Now, I have to disclose that I'm retired Air Force, member of the retired reserve. Served a long time in the military in various places, and had a family doing that almost the entire period. I enlisted in 1951. My family at that time, it were my grandparents who raised me, they're very supportive of that. Later on, went into flight school and got married, started having kids. We have six kids. And just talking stateside now, we moved all over the United States. I won't bore you with all different places we moved, but it was typically every 2 years. So my wife was not employed at that time, but many service wives are employed, so they move, and then they have to give up their job and get a job someplace else.
might be going to a fine church, go to another community, and you have to start out somewhere else. The kids are in school, they get disrupted from school, and sometimes, one of the kids, it happened to me a couple of times, a kid, a senior in high school, and I get transferred. And so it's quite a shock, and that's military family. But the kids are part of the family too, and they were very supportive to me, and I appreciate that. Of course, the curtains don't fit at the next place that you go, and it's quite a hassle. You know, when you get the curtains up, you know your orders are in your basket to go somewhere else. So, but then, you know, you are in the military, you're either in combat or you're preparing for combat. That's what all these states are, the assignments. Well, they finally discovered I knew how to control airplanes. I got sent to Vietnam, wife, six kids, 40 years old, and suddenly I'm got rid of my fancy blue uniform, and I'm in a John Wayne outfit. And, you know, Vietnam was something else, and I had a lot of worries over there. But you know what? When all these interesting things were happening, I didn't worry about the family back home, because I had a wife who was taking care of things, getting the plumbing fixed that needed to be done. We communicated all that time in that long ago era. We didn't have Skype, we didn't have email, so we get tape recorders. She had one, another one, we sent tape letters back and forth. And that was my family. And other people who served with me had the very same family. It's very, very supportive. It made me feel better over there. It made me do my duty better. And for some people, I think it can even save their lives. You know, they're in the middle of battle someplace. And if you're concerned about, you know, not being supported back home, it could actually kill you. So it's really, really very, very important. To see if I missed anything here. When you join the military, your family joins with you. And I know when I was in Vietnam, there was a family support group back at that time in Ohio. And the wives of the Vietnam people serving over there, they met and they supported each other. I did a better job because of that. I wouldn't worry about, you know, quote unquote, the daily problems back home. I knew they supported me, and I think I did a much better job from that. And I think some people came home from Vietnam because they had family support along the way, and they did a better job. And I don't think it matters whether it was the Revolutionary War, and I was not in that, by the way. I'll make a disclosure of that. I know it was a long time ago, but it didn't matter whether it was one of the old wars, World War II, Vietnam in my case, and now we have Iraq and Afghanistan and God knows where else it's going to be. But the family is the bedrock foundation of what makes our military great. And I think they deserve to be recognized. This is one small way to do it, and I urge passage of this bill.
Okay. Any questions for the sponsor? I want to take opportunity to say, if you get a chance, go on Amazon. There's a book called My Only War, and the author is sitting right next to me here, and it's a story of...
it's only $3.98.
Yeah. It's a great read. I read it this summer and enjoyed it. So thank you, Esther. We're going to call up now General Hummel first, and if you would, give us your testimony on the bill.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I would point out, family support is needed, whether it's a buck private, airman basic, a general, or a four-star general. It doesn't matter. You need family support.
That's right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the House State Affairs Committee, my name is Laurie Hummel, and I am Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'm also privileged to serve as the Adjutant General of the Alaska National Guard, and I want to thank you for inviting me to testify before you today. I am honored to speak in favor of House Bill 175. Well, I'm always prepared to publicly acknowledge the patriotism, dedication, and skill of Alaska's military men and women, I'm especially pleased to focus on the enormous contributions of our military families. In my present position, I see daily examples of the many sacrifices military families make for all of us. They quite literally make possible the operation of our armed forces, the Guard and Reserve and the active component military alike, but the public rarely fully appreciates their contributions. But I don't need to be the Adjutant General to understand the importance of service members' families. I know what military families do because I've seen it and lived it firsthand in my life. My father was in the Army from 1948 to 1972, close to 24 years. For all but the first four of those, he was married to a woman I shall call Mom. So they spent 20 married years together in service. 4 years of the 20, or 20%, he spent in combat. 1 year in Korea, three following in Vietnam. A total of 2 years of the 20, or 10% of that time, he spent away from home on field exercises and other places the Army sent him. She had two babies alone overseas, as both times he was away in the field. They lived in nine different places in 20 years. She would have liked to have had her own career, but she put those plans on the shelf as she supported military unit functions, Army volunteer programs, and acted as both parents in the absence of Dad. She starched fatigues in the bathtub, made Valentines for single soldiers, and held hands with those whose loved ones did not come home from battle. That happened to be my mom, but it describes a lot of moms and dads and wives and husbands and brothers, sisters, and let's not forget military kids. I've been a deployed soldier, and I've been the spouse of a deployed soldier. In fact, I'm the spouse of a deployed soldier right now. I've had lots of conversations with many dual military couples, and the response from them is always the same. Being the left-behind spouse at home is harder. The spouse at home has twice the work, all the worry, and none of the credit. This is just my personal experience. There are lots of families whose service members' deployments resulted in life-altering injuries. When this happens, family members' lives are just as affected as service members as they adjust and they care and they give. Similarly, those who gave their lives leave behind the Gold Star families who are shattered, families who find a way to move forward because they have to but never fully heal. Nearly 74,000 veterans call Alaska home. We have more veterans per capita than any other state. We are lucky to keep the experience of our veterans here in Alaska and fortunate that their families follow suit. Our veterans and their families deserve our unwavering support and our continued efforts. Our success is not sustained by what we have already done, but what more we can provide and how best we can show our appreciation, especially to the backbone of the military, our military families. We salute these heroes on the home front and support their efforts and your efforts to make Alaska an even more welcoming and appreciative community for our military, our veterans, and their families. How entirely appropriate that you have selected 1 November, All Saints Day, for this recognition. Thank you.
I won't ask the sponsor if that was intentional. We'll do it. Kevin, thank you for your testimony. Kevin?
Very good. Never thought about All Saints Day.
Good morning, committee. I'm not good with this. I've never done this before, but I'm Kevin Dean. My wife is a staff sergeant in the military currently. We've been through 2 deployments together as a family. I got 2 children. My daughter's in the back. She's a little too shy to speak. But to echo the general, she said it really well. There's been a lot of times where, as a spouse, as a husband, I'm left to take care of a lot of the household duties. There's been a lot of benefits for us as a family for the National Guard. There's always family support has been there to help us, ask us any questions, help with the kids. The first deployment that she went through with Afghanistan, before they came back, they sent us up to Anchorage for a reintegration seminar, a couple of days where we sat and the kids talked with people and we took classes about how to react and how the family changes when people come back from overseas. So there's a lot of benefits out there and a lot of help, and I think being recognized for any of this is an awesome thing. So the day's awesome. I know November is Military Family Month, and being recognized in Alaska on November 1st would be awesome. Thank you.
Well, Kevin, thank you for coming in. I mean, it's really a breath of fresh air for the committee always to hear from, the real world. I mean, it tends to be a bit of an ivory tower.
Well, he speaks a lot of spouses.
What's your daughter's name?
Aberdeen.
Welcome. Now that you know that it isn't real painful, watching for opportunity to testify, we always appreciate it. Thank you. Any questions for Kevin? Representative Greenberg?
Are we going to have other witnesses?
No, there's nobody else signed up.
I would like
up.
To ask the general or somebody on her staff, maybe her.
Well, when it comes back before the committee, is that okay if you have more questions for the questions?
At some point, I'd like
okay,
that.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Okay, so what that does is we'll close public testimony except for as questions come up, on the further questions on the bills. Back for the committee, Representative Greenberg.
And I don't know, General, who I will ask that to. I understand that there is an effort now to provide a waiver for admission to the bar for spouses, or I don't know if it's spouses or significant others, I think it's spouses, of military folks. In other words, so if a spouse comes into Alaska with their active duty other, they will not have to get admitted to the Alaska bar during the period of time that they're in Alaska. And I know there have been some efforts to extend other types of licenses to spouses so that they don't have to get licensed as a welder or whatever it is. I'd like to ask a question on how that's coming along.
General Hummel, if you come back and re-identify yourself for the record and answer the question, and if you don't have, it's sufficient for us to, if you just get us the information, we'll get it to the whole committee. So,
I'm Laurie Hummel, through the chair, Representative Greenberg. I don't have an answer to your question, but we will get a comprehensive list of those efforts that have been made in certification and licensure waiver or adjustments for military spouses, and we'll provide it to the committee.
Through the chair, thank you very much, because it's important when people who are skilled, it's not just the service person who may be skilled or a member of a profession, but the spouse may be a doctor, it could be an accountant or a lawyer or whoever, that we try to get the benefit of their services in Alaska, too.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming back up.
Okay. My pleasure.
So it's before the committee. Is there any further comments of the committee or questions, or what is the will of the committee? If it gets silent too long, I'm going to represent Grimm.
I'll move the bill with individual.
Oh, go ahead. Fine, sure.
I move the bill with individual recommendation.
Okay. So your motion, if you'd state it, is you move HB 175, version alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. Did I get your motion right?
You did.
Thank you. See, no objection? Second bill of the day. Where are we really going? Mr. Chair, do you want me to gavel out, or do you want me to pass the gavel back to you?
Give me the gavel. I want to thank the committee for passing both bills, and my trusty vice chair for taking over. I think that's typically what I like to do when I have my own personal bill. We're working on the schedule for Tuesday. I don't think it's complete yet. We'll get it out as soon as we can. And then, like I said earlier, we have an overview of corrections a week from today, so I kind of prepare your questions. It's good to be back. It I really like this committee. And any comments from anybody? If not, we are adjourned.